Yeah, make sure you guys refer to the pilot episode, The Nine Signs of a Serial Killer. That episode has a lot of information on what's going to be going on for, or what characteristics to look for and how they classify the serial killers. You guys might hear us saying, well, that's a recipe for disaster. Yeah. But that's because we're probably going to point out what we were talking about, most likely. Without any further ado, we're going to go ahead and start us. Today we are doing serial killer Dorothea Puente, a very notorious serial killer here in the state of California. And she was on the city of Sacramento, very close to us. Very, very close. Okay, let's get it started, guys. She was born on January 9th, 1929, and she was a convicted serial killer. She was born in San Bernardino County here in California to two alcoholic fathers. Her father was a cotton picker, both of her parents abused her, and she often had a scavenge for food. That already sounds like a very bad recipe for a disaster, you know, like bad childhood, poor childhood, you know, one of the early signs.
I agree.
Yeah, right? Like, that's one of the early signs. Puente's father died when she was about 4 years old, and when she was 6 years old, so 2 years later, her mother also died, thus making her an orphan. And she was put in a foster home until some of her relatives from Fresno, California came and took her in. And later in life, when she was interviewed and asked about her childhood, she said that she was one of the 18 children that were born and raised in Mexico. So she had 17 other siblings? That's a lot, don't you think?
I don't know. I think that's a lot. And then, I mean, as you just stated right now, in later life, she lied about her childhood. So we don't even know what to believe with this woman. So if she did have 17 other siblings, that is a lot of kids. That's a lot of brothers and sisters. So damn.
Yeah. But like I said, we don't know. I mean, it says that she lied. Could be true. Could not. No real, 100% real, no fake, as they say on the internet. But yeah. You want to introduce us to the next
yeah. Sure. So in 1946, she married for the first time, but her husband died of a heart attack within 2 years. For money, she tried to forge checks, but she was eventually caught and sentenced to a year in jail. She was paroled after 6 months. Soon after release, she was impregnated by a man she barely knew and gave birth to a baby girl, which she had to give up for adoption later. In 1952, she married a Swede named Axel Johansson and had a violent 14-year marriage with him. Wow.
Wow.
So, she, clearly, you know, just from reading that, wow, you know.
It's another sign, you know, abuse.
Go ahead. What were you going to say?
I was going to say that's another sign, yeah. Abuse, you know, and it's just the fact that she was kind of forging checks and only got a slap to the wrist, and I mean, she was only sentenced to like 1 year in prison, in jail, not even prison, just jail. And then she got parole. The universe was telling her, hey, you gotta turn your life around, you know, like change your ways. And, but yeah, 14 years of like abuse, that's a lot. You know, that's a lot. So in 1960, she was arrested.
If you marry someone, you want to be happy, but obviously with her background, you don't know how she is as an adult, you know, how that affected her psychologically. You know, childhood is one of the
nine signs.
What we talked about in our last podcast, you know? Yeah, one of the nine signs. It's very important to look into that. And so clearly we're already seeing that too in this with her.
Yeah. And then
so Victor, you want to go ahead and give us the next fact, or what else do you have to say?
No, that's pretty much it. Like, I mean, she done goof. She was, you know, she had a fucked up life pretty much. So in 1960,
pretty much, yeah, just kind of sad.
Yeah. So in 1960, she was arrested in a brothel, and for those of you who don't know what a brothel is, it's a whorehouse. Search it up. And she was sentenced to 90 days in the Sacramento County Jail. After she was released, she was arrested yet again, but this time she was arrested for vagrancy and sentenced to another days in jail. Following that, she stated that she got involved in miscellaneous illegal acts that over time became more serious. This activity showed down a great deal when she found out work as a nurse aide. So caring for the disabled and elderly people in private homes, in a short time, she started to manage boarding houses. So then she became homeless. See, like, once again, the universe is giving her chances, opportunities to change her ways. But, you know, she decided not to. They only gave her 90 days in jail. Like, 90 days is nothing. Just 3 months, guys. Right. 3 months. You know, and then after that, she started doing, you know, more serious acts, more miscellaneous illegal acts. And she was even able to find work as a nurse's aide for caring for disabled and elderly people. If that's not the universe telling you, hey, I'm going to throw you another bone, you know, that's, I don't know what that is. Like, I have no idea what that is. What do you got to say to that? Or, you know, nothing? You want to add anything to
it? I agree. I agree with you on that. I agree with you on that because she spent 3 months in jail, like you were saying. And, you know, here's the universe throwing her a positive sign. You know, she found work as a nurse's aide. She could have easily retired with that job or continue with that job and just led a normal life. But, you know, or who knows, maybe this sparked an interest for her in taking advantage of disabled and elderly people. We'll find out later.
Yeah, it's very interesting. She did 6 months in jail, pretty much. So far, she's down to what? One marriage and 1 year in...
One marriage.
1 year in what, 6 months in prison or in the system? So keep track of them, people.
So,
keep track of them.
You know, honestly, she's on. So, yeah, I'll go ahead and introduce the next fact.
Go for it.
So she divorced Johansson in 1966 and then married Roberto Puente in Mexico City, a man who was 19 years her junior. So Roberto had trouble staying faithful to Dorothea, and the marriage only lasted 2 years. Shortly before the end of the marriage, however, Dorothea took over a three-story, 16-bedroom care home at 2100 F Street in Sacramento, California. There, she provided care and comfort to the homeless and destitute of the area. So not only did she get remarried, but she got remarried to an unfaithful guy. Once again, you know, her poor choice in men. Again, you know, that leads back to her, you know, how her father was with her. During her childhood, so she had, you know, father issues and things like that. So, and you know, and then not only that, but I mean, she literally took over a three-story, 16-bedroom care home. Like, what? Like, what? Like, who just takes over a three-story, 6-bedroom care home?
Hey, that's the beauty of
Victor,
alimony.
What are your thoughts?
I'm just saying that's the beauty of alimony and, you know, divorce here in the States, you know, like you could be a successful person single and then you get married and you get divorced and they take everything. And you're just like, okay, you know, like, okay. But no, yeah, like, I mean, the universe was already setting her up for, like, you know, like things that could have been good things, but they weren't good things at the end, you know, it's, you know, that's just what I'm gonna leave it at. But yeah, the first sign of something wrong was when her neighbors noticed the odd activities of a homeless alcoholic man known as Chief, who Puente stated that she had adopted and made her her handyman. Okay. So Puente had Chief dig in the basement and carry soil and rubbish away in the wheelbarrow. The basement floor was then discovered with a concrete slab. Chief later took down a garage in the backyard, installed a fresh concrete slab there as well, and soon afterward, Chief mysteriously disappeared. So, what do you think about the? Do you think Mr. Chief here realized that, you know, what was going on, and he said, you know what, fuck it, I'm out, or do you think that he himself was a victim of Miss Puente, Miss Dorothea? What do you think?
Well, honestly, I'm thinking that he saw what was going on with Miss Dorothea and what she was up to. So I feel like, we gotta dig deeper into this, I suppose. But then it says that he mysteriously disappeared, so he could have been her first victim. Or as she was committing these murders, you did mention that she adopted him and all that and made him her handyman. So I'm thinking that throughout his handiness, you know, he discovered something that he didn't like and could have potentially brought it up with Dorothea And then the two clashed, and, you know, obviously she doesn't want her business being out there in the street. So, I mean, that could have, you know, she could have easily have murdered Chief. Or, you know, Chief could have just skipped town too and doesn't want any part of it. So, I don't know. This has multiple different, you know, ways that this could have ended. So, this is just kind of weird.
You think she could have murdered Chief though? Because look, she was born, let's do some mathematics real quick here. So what, she was born in 1982, no wait, hold on, oh, 1929, minus the closest thing, closest to,
right,
to Chief, let's say 1966, that's what it says here, or 1960, she was, okay, so she was 31 years old, yeah, so I want to guesstimate that Chief,
so what you're
was
saying is
on
that
his 30, on his 20s, maybe 20s, early 30s. And you seen them crackheads around here, around town, how these muffles are like Superman, you know, like they have no fear whatsoever, like they're almost invincible. So it makes me think that Chief didn't get killed by Dorothea. Chief kind of just said, you know what, fuck this, I don't need this, I'm out, you know, like if you go by numbers, mathematical numbers, you know, just from what observations
here, that way,
here around downtown, yeah, with the crackheads, you know, homeless people too.
Yeah, when you put it that way, it kind of makes me reevaluate my thoughts. But probably is a lot older than it, and so obviously she couldn't find a way to murder him without either drugging him or anything like that. So, mm-hmm, yeah, so I think your theory is a lot better. For sure, he could have just dipped down.
Yep. So.
And so yeah. And then so with that, we go into our next fact. So Puente, you know, she married for the third time in 1976 to a Pedro Montalvo, who was a physically abusive alcoholic. The marriage only lasted a few months, and Puente started to spend time in local bars looking for older men who were receiving benefits. Wow. She forged their signatures to steal their money, but she eventually was caught and charged with 34 counts of treasury fraud. While on probation, she continued to commit the same fraud. This woman is a piece of work. Not only did she get remarried, but I mean, she started, you know, gaining interest in receiving those benefits from older men. So,
Yeah,
Victor,
I mean,
what do you think?
By then, by 1973, she was already like 47 years old. So she must have been getting married to, what, guys closer to what, their 70s? Give or take, because that's when you can start getting like the pension, right?
Yeah.
70s,
yeah.
Late 70s, or really early, really late 60s. Yeah, so she was a gold digger in a way. You know, but sometimes you got to do what you got to do if you have a really messed up background like she did. She didn't receive any jail time this time. So check this out, guys. We are down to 3 marriages in 1 year and 6 months. Correct me if I'm wrong. You know, that she's been, you know, that she's gone through so far. So 3 marriages, 1 year and 6 months in the system. You know, non-specific, but, you know, that's very low. That's a very low time for her to be on the system, and yet no one noticed or no one tried to stop her, you know, from doing this. So according to California Court of Appeal records, in 1981, Puente began renting an upstairs apartment located in 1426 F Street in downtown Sacramento. The 9 murders with which she was charged in 1990, she was convicted in 1993 of 3 of them. So there were 9 murders in 1990, and from what I get at, in 1993 she got convicted of 3 of them, you know, because they say that. Three of them were associated with the murders that took place upstairs when she had previously had the 16-room boarding house. Okay, that's interesting.
So, the ones associated.
Yeah, so...
So, they were not associated with her previous boarding house, huh?
No, so these were, like, different ones, I guess, but... So, she committed 9 murders in that time span, 1990. And a 9 charge of 3 murders, which 3 of them took place.
Wow.
In the boarding house. Okay. What do you think about that?
Wow.
Any inputs?
I just think it's kind of crazy how they only charged her with three of them. So what happened to the other six, you know? Because it says nine, but she was only convicted for three of them. And so I'm guessing the ones, I'm guessing the six were in this, you know, this upstairs apartment on 1426 F Street.
Mm-hmm.
And then the three of them were in her boarding house, right? Wow. So clearly, she already has the, you know.
I want to say those first three murders. I want to say those three murders. They tie back down to Chief, because remember how we say that Chief took down in a garage and he made a cement slab, and then he went and made mm-hmm. like two other cement slabs around the house in the basement. So I want to say those were the first
You're right.
three.
You're right.
Yeah, the first three murders that she committed.
You're absolutely correct. Yeah. Wow. Yeah, that makes the most sense, because Chief probably that's why she had him make the cement slabs, and also, wow, yeah,
in there,
that makes sense to me.
Kind of hide the bodies away. That's what I want to say. That's what I'm thinking. But you know, I could be wrong. Could be different murders, but that's what the more logical, explanation to it.
Yeah, yeah, I like that. I like the explanation. So with that said, in April 1982, 61-year-old Ruth Monroe began living with Puente in her upstairs apartment at 1426 F Street, but soon died from an overdose of codeine and Tylenol. It's quite a mixture. Puente told police that the woman was very depressed because her husband was terminally ill. They believed her and judged the incident a suicide. A suicide, people. So it wasn't believed to be a murder. It was suicide. So that's what was believed.
So what, we're up to 10 bodies? 10 bodies right now so far, no?
Ten bodies, yeah. 10 bodies. This woman, Dorothea, she's up to, her body count is 10. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, damn, sounds like...
You can know, we just talk about the mixture?
I was going to say, it sounds like Ruth was getting lit up in there, you know, oxycodone, you know, she was throwing the lean for the homies with the Tylenol. Now, but on a serious note, either she did overdose, like, accidentally because she became depressed. I mean, the excuse itself is very valid, you know, I mean, if your loved one gets like, terminally ill and, you know, they're going to die, most people go the easy route and just say, you know what, fuck it, I'll join them in the afterlife.
Yeah.
You know, so maybe she did die on her own, maybe. You know, I mean, she was a 61-year-old, like, elderly lady.
Yeah.
Maybe she, you know, mistook in medicines and then kaboom. But then again, maybe Puente killed her, you know.
Yeah, that could easily be, that could be what happened. Because we don't know. Honestly, we don't know. Because, you know, like you stated, she's 61 years old. She recently became depressed. Her husband was terminally ill, you know, he's on his path to dying. I don't know what kind, I mean, that could take a lot of effect on your spouse, and so yeah, easily, you know, confusing her medicines, that could have been for sure. Yeah, but I don't know. It's,
yeah,
interesting for sure.
Yeah, it was
very very interesting.
That was a very good excuse though. I mean, like, the universe once again gave her the shield of protection, you know, where she didn't get convicted for that one either. She just said, okay, whatever. But yeah, then again, after a few weeks later, the police were back after a 7-year-old prisoner or pensioner named Malcolm McKenzie accused Puente of drugging him and then robbing him. She was convicted of 3 charges of theft on August 18, 1982, and was sentenced to serve 5 years in jail. While in jail, Puente started a pen pal friendship that later on developed when Puente was released in 1985. Okay, so she only served, what, 3 years?
Yeah.
Yeah, 3 years. She
based
was,
off of the info. Based
yeah.
off the info. Yeah.
Wow, okay. So after serving, yeah, just 3 years, on her quick and release sentence, she was waited and greeted in front of the jail by a red 1984 pickup. So keep an eye on the pickup, you know, it's gonna come back after this, like the more iconic thing of the whole story. The relationship quickly develop into a marriage, where they marry, and this is gonna surprise you guys. Guess what every couple does? They open up a joint bank account and share 16 for rent in one of the upstairs apartment. I mean, the guy's name, wow. he was a 77-year-old retiree, and his name was Everson Gilmount. So she was in jail, and you know, she was able to still find.
Especially in jail too, you know, how out of everybody she found, you know, 77-year-old who was on the verge of receiving his pension. Like, how opportunistic is that? I mean, look at that, like, wow.
Yeah, but then again, she wasn't that young no more. Wow. She was like almost on her, I want to say she was almost on her 60s. Let's just see.
Yeah, I think so too.
She was 55 when she got, she was 56, yeah, almost on her 60s when she got released from jail, 56. And so that brings us up to, let's see, 4 marriages, 3 years and 6 months in prison so far, plus any unknown parole time. You know, can't really do anything of that because we don't know. But yeah, she's been having good luck so far. You know, the universe is protecting her. You know, the universe gave her chances to turn around.
That's for sure.
Don't say, you know what, we don't want to do this no more, but no, she kept on going with it.
She rolled on with it, you know, she continued on her, you know, her crazy path and her, you know, so, And so that leads us into our next fact. So, in November of 1985, Puente hired Ismael Flores to install some wood paneling in her apartment for his labor and an additional $800. Puente, you're not going to believe this, Puente gave him a red 1980 Ford pickup truck in good condition, which she stated belonged to her boyfriend. Now, Dorothy Puente built a box, 6-foot box, to a storage depot. Flores agreed, and Puente joined him. On the way, however, she told him to stop while they were on Garden Highway in Sutter County and dump the box on the riverbank. In an unofficial household, Flores questioned why, but Puente told him that the contents of the box were just junk. Just junk. That's a little suspicious, considering, you know, I mean, we don't know how tall, you know, her last husband was. Or
the man was six, I mean, I almost want to say the man was anywhere from 5'11" to 6 feet. I want to say that just because. But the dimensions of the box, you know, it says 6 feet by 3 feet, so 6 feet long by 2 feet wide. I think that's what they say, you know.
Almost like if she was having just enough cushion room, right? Wiggle room, just in case she got it wrong or not.
Yeah.
You know, just enough room to just to body of her ex-lover. I certainly think that, I mean, I wouldn't put it beneath her. I certainly think that she saw the benefits. She saw, you know, the pension, especially if she was going to continue to get those payments just by being his wife, you know, I think she put him in that box and, you know, disposed of him, had her, you know, had Flores dispose of it in the riverbank. I certainly wouldn't hold that beneath her. How about you, Victor? What do you think about this?
Honestly, if I would have been on Flores' shoes, I would have been like, okay, this is kind of sketchy. Like, no one in their right mind. I mean, yeah, the payment seems like it was a fair payment. You know, $800 for whatever he did. Don't really specify. But, I mean, no one in their right mind gives you a pickup truck. You know, like, they don't just say, here is $100 saying, very much. You know, they don't say that. You know, that's very suspicious.
No, they don't.
And it's just the fact that, which I'm assuming by the time the man was done with the box, he kind of looked like a casket, you know, like, or just my imagination going wild.
Yeah. I mean, this could be a miracle for her because, you know, she disposed of a of a body just in plain sight, just like that. So that's something else.
Yeah.
Wow.
So then
I know. Yeah.
I don't know. It's just weird. It's just like it's all. You know, she had it all schemed out, all planned. Maybe she didn't have it all planned out. Maybe she did. But then again, she's showing a lot of. Nah, she's not really showing a lot of IQ here, just because she went and dumped a body on a water. You know, you don't go dump bodies on a water, even if they're on a box. They're not gonna decompose fast enough. They're not, you know, average IQ. You know.
Yeah.
86, when a fisherman spotted the box sitting about 3 feet from the bank of the river, and the man informed the police and investigators that there was a weird box floating around with badly decomposed and unidentified body of an elderly man inside. When collected Everson's guilt was because he was ill, and see, look at this lady. She's I don't even know what words to use. Like, she has no shame. That's the word. She also maintained a room and a boarding, and she had the boarding house going on again. She took another 40 new tenants, and most of them who were all alcoholics and drug addicts. And although, I mean, she was making good money off of this, she wanted more money, you know, and she started cruising the bars again for new customers. Now, that right there, just the fact that she dumped the guy's body, you know, see, that's what I'm saying. She didn't have a really high IQ. She had like a best and average IQ, because, I mean, she was doing everything she could to cover her tracks in a way, but just the box, I think the box was her downfall right there. You know, she threw the man in the river, they found him, and, you know, Mr. Everson was missing, but, you know, she still was collecting the pension and writing letters to the family. I think that was her downfall right there. That's just me.
Yeah, I agree, because who's gonna dump a box, especially with, you know, a human body that you know is gonna decompose, especially if you didn't take the right precautions, you didn't, you know, do, like, I mean, honestly, yeah, just like you were saying, it shows her IQ. It's not one of her brightest moments. And I just think that the way that she chose to dispose of the body wasn't very smart, because obviously, what, this was November of 85, so last year, not only what, a year later, the box suddenly comes, you know, it's gonna come back up. And you know, unfortunately, in the case of the body, you know, it was badly decomposed and it was unidentifiable, so I'll give her credit for that one. But I don't know, that's just kind of at this point, I honestly do believe that it was Everson in there, for sure. I think it was Everson, because, I mean, they said that there was a body of an elderly man inside. He was an elderly gentleman, and that kind of fits Everson's profile, you know. So I want to believe that it was Everson, you know. And then I'll be interested in the money. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is a piece of work, just the fact that, like you said, you know, I mean, she dumped it on November of 1985, and on January of 1986, like 2 months later, you know, they found it. Mm-hmm. So it's only like,
yeah,
it's only
pretty
like
much
3 months,
yeah,
give or take.
So it wasn't even that long. Mm-mm. Like a couple months. Yeah, so I correct myself, but yeah, it was a couple months. I mean, the time span, I mean, Jesus. It's just really, I mean, wow. And also the fact that she wasn't content with her boarding house business. She wanted more. So I'm like, this woman is just going to do anything just for the sake of getting more money. You know, and if that means harming and stealing from her boardies, or, you know, the people that lived in her boarding house, which, by the way, were all alcoholics and drug addicts. So it's kind of like as if she chose the people that she chose to have live with her is like people that probably don't have a lot of support, you know. And that ties back also to not ties back to anything really, but it's just, I don't know, I feel like a lot of the people that she chose to rent her rooms to were people that already were at such a low point in their life. We don't know what kind of support they had and if people are going to be looking for them, you know? So it's to them, or to her, they were indispensable.
Yeah, you know? So indispensable, like, people, wow, for her, you know, just people that she could have got rid of them quick enough. And if they were missing, you know, people are not going to look for them. Because, I mean, it's very hard. I don't know about you guys, but it is very hard to track a homeless person, you know, especially when they're out there. And, you know, you're looking for them. They really can't find them. And if they do, it takes a long time for somebody to find a homeless person, you know, for whatever business you find, they're looking for them. But, yeah, it's, yeah, she already had her mindset of what kind of people she was going after and stuff, her, you know, her agenda. Yeah, every month, Puente collected all of the tenants' mail before they signed and gave them only a small portion of their money. Angrily, the tenants squandered what little money they had at the nearest bar and were picked up by police and jailed for 30 days. Following anonymous tips, Puente then pocketed the rest of the tenants' money. So, it's interesting how, like you were saying earlier, you know, she did pick the homeless people, the people that were druggies or whatever. People that were not really okay in the best social status, you could say. So she could, like, you know, take their money away and they would have been like, okay, well, I got a little bit of money from the government, you know, it's better than nothing, you know. But in reality, they were getting a bigger chunk of change, but Puente was charging them, you know. She was like, well, this is for the house, you know. Like, this is for supplies. You know, that was her excuse when she got arrested.
Yeah, I kind of find that a little, you know, crazy. I mean, not crazy, because, I mean, knowing all the facts that we know about her, she's willing to do anything for money. And so the fact that she went ahead and not only opened their mail, which is legal in California.
It's a federal crime.
By the way. So the fact that she... Yeah, it's a federal crime. So the fact that she was not only stealing their money, opening their mail, and then also it's like I was saying, they're perfect kind of tenants to have, because they're going to get picked up and jailed for 30 days. And so she could pocket the rest of the money, just like you were saying. So, you know, they're very disposable individuals. You know, that's not, in her eyes, you know, they're very disposable. She's like, okay, let me find the next homeless person, or let me find the next drug addict that has benefits and let me pocket that. So I just find it, you know, I wouldn't even put it past her at this point, knowing what we know about her, you know. So
bring this, we all came down to her last moments of freedom, you know, the last couple of moments, days, whatever you guys want to call them, that Miss Puente was free, hopping on, you know.
Yeah, so her last moments of freedom, like Victor was saying. On November 11, 1988, police found a body buried in the lawn of 60-year-old Dorothea Puente. Seven bodies were eventually found and unearthed. Puente was charged with a total of 9 murders, convicted of 3, and is now serving 2 life sentences. So yeah, you know, her moment of freedom is definitely over, or was definitely over in November of 1988, with the you know, with the discovery of all the bodies in her lawn, in little old Sacramento of all places, in the lawn. So, I don't know. What do you think, Victor?
It's interesting how, like, in California, close to Sacramento, all my life, and I did not even know that we had such a infamous, you know, celebrity nearby like that. You know, she's what, like, 10-20 minutes away from us, give or take, you know?
Yeah, about. No, with horrible traffic, you know, the dreaded Sacramento traffic, but yeah, give or take.
Yeah, so the final, the final facts, all right, guys, check this out. So the number of victims that Dorothea killed was 9+ people. She married 4 people, 4 times.
And of course, all 4 of them were a failure. And she served a time of 3 years and 6 months in prison prior to her being sentenced to life. And fun fact, she died in prison on March 27, 2011.
Which is not that long ago.
Yes.
Yeah. Wow. So I want to say that, you know, this woman, she ran a boarding house. And, you know, she cast the social security checks of, you know, her elderly and mentally disabled boarders, you know. That's certainly something very interesting that, you know, just to talk about this and get to talk about it, you know, because like you said, the location is so close to home. So just finding out all this information about this woman, and, you know, it's unfortunate what happened to her victims and things like that. And it took so long for her to finally get put away. So, yeah. I don't know. It's just unbelievable. But then, you know, when we read the facts and we get to dig a little deeper, it kind of becomes not so more, you know, unbelievable that, you know, she would do this. So.
So yeah, like I was saying, like you were saying, just to add on to it, it's very interesting how she had all these prior convictions, you know. I'm pretty sure they've told her, hey, you know, you can't be doing this shit, you know, but yet no one did anything to stop it, you know, they just kind of like let it happen, you know, like I'm 100% sure, like, you know, I don't care who tells me, unless Dorothea comes and tells me herself that the cops and I told her that, you know, she needed to stop the boarding house, no one did anything to stop it, you know. What are your final thoughts?
Yeah, especially that too. I don't know. My final thoughts is that, you know, she had this prior, these prior convictions in jail. I'm sure this had to have come up in some way or another, you know, and I'm also interested to know, does she suffer from any kind of psychological, you know, any psychological problems and things like that? I don't know. I guess that's just something that I want to further research, just to see if there is any kind of information on her psychological well-being, you know. Because if she did, then why didn't the police do anything sooner, you know?
Yeah, I don't think they mentioned anything about that. But then again, you know, it is kind of illegal to reveal medical records in a court unless that's what I read, unless they have like a judge order. Other than that, they can't really, they can't be saying, hey, you know, so-and-so had this, you know, so-and-so had that. You know, it's just like the Confidentiality Act, I think that's what it's called.
Confidentiality, the HIPAA. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I can see that being one of the reasons why they wouldn't want to disclose that kind of information, especially. But yeah, you know, as far as closing thoughts, I mean, I feel like this was very interesting. Just to get to know a little bit about Miss Dorothea, especially with her being so close to us. So this was certainly quite interesting.
Yeah. Just to close it up, guys, wrap it up and everything. Thank you very much for staying with us to the very, very end. If you guys like the podcast, you know, let us know. Give us some, you know, share it with your friends. You know, that would really help us out grow and stuff. Let your friends know that we're doing, you know, we started doing officially now the episodes of serial killers from around the world. We have two possible serial killers that we want to discuss for the next episode. I will be putting a survey on Instagram, on the Chronicas Instagram. And you guys let me know which one. So if not, we'll probably just do it, you know, whichever one we decide upon. I want to do the one with the Poquianchis, the ladies from Mexico that ran a whorehouse and they killed over 150 people.
That certainly would be interesting.
The Butcher of Rosta from that book. That one was pretty interesting too. Like, you know, the guy had a really fucked up childhood, and he didn't really overcome his childhood in a way, but. He's kind of learned how to get away with stuff. When we research and I send you the information, you're gonna be like, okay, like this man was lucky as hell, you know. But let us know, give us some comments, you know, give us some thoughts.
And other than that, we are, you know, we're wrapping up. And thank you guys. Have a good night. Goodbye.